Welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. So glad that you're with me today. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and I know we've been gone for a couple weeks. The last time we were podcasting, we were previewing the Super Bowl. So if this is the only spot where you get your football news, and I hope it is, spoiler, the Patriots won the Super Bowl. We're a few weeks removed, so we're not really going to rehash that. I know you've gotten plenty of coverage at ProFootballWeekly.com and elsewhere, but I do have a special podcast for you today with our draft expert, Greg Gabriel. He just finished authoring another PFW draft magazine. I'm confident to say it is the best one yet. Will be available on newsstands here in just a couple weeks and is available for order now at ProFootballWeekly.com. So make sure you get your copy. We will go over some of the goods inside of there with Greg here in a little bit. But more so, we're going to talk about the Combine. And Greg has been pretty prolific, actually, writing for our website, too, in recent weeks. And he's broken down the Combine from all kinds of angles that I thought we would kind of go over on the podcast. So looking forward to chatting with him soon. And looking forward to getting this podcast back in a little bit more regular rotation as free agency approaches. I'll tell you, I know free agency is, it needs to be here already because my Twitter timeline is filled with Earl Mitchell's travel plans. And no disrespect to Earl Mitchell. I've actually always liked him as a player, the former Texan and Dolphin, but now is the time when only the guys who have been cut can catch on with new teams. So Earl Mitchell's free agent tour is underway. He's been in San Francisco and is in Denver, I believe, as we tape. And again, I'm mostly joking. The reporters who do this work is great, but I think we're ready for maybe some bigger names and some more action to start flying. So I want to reintroduce you with our wonderful sponsor, Loot Crate, and then we'll dive in with Greg Gabriel. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. Roar. That roar in the distance is a call. Will you answer it? This month, we're going primal and unleashing the beasts of some of pop culture's most ferocious franchises. This savagely sweet collection has items from Overwatch, Wolverine, Jurassic World, and Predator, and includes, as always, our monthly tee and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right. Once again, thank you very much to Loot Crate, and make sure you head over there and get your new pack from Loot Crate. So before we head in with Greg, just one more reminder that at ProFootballWeekly.com, we have been doing a ton of free agency work. We're only a couple weeks away, and we're breaking down all 32 teams in-house free agents. We've got slideshows galore. We've got our top 50 list. We've got lots of videos and overviews of each position starting to go up on a daily basis. So make sure you check it out. There's a lot of good content. And like I said, we'll start getting into the free agent stuff a little more heavy on the podcast, very soon here, obviously. But enough of me rambling. Let's bring in a real expert, Greg Gabriel, and talk a little bit of Draft Combine. All right, now pleased to be joined by Greg Gabriel, the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide author, and the great Greg Gabriel, over 30 years of college NFL and college scouting experience. And Greg, what's happening? Are you ready? Draft season now is officially underway with the Combine next week.
Draft season's going strong, and so is the lying season. You'll probably hear more lies in the next 8 weeks than you will the rest of the time put together.
Well, I'll tell you, Greg, I was known for a white lie or two growing up as a kid. So the Arkish, they were all, again, very, they were white lies and pretty harmless ones. But no, we'll definitely hear some craziness. And maybe on one upcoming podcast or column, we may ask you for some of the craziest lies you've heard over the years. But today, Greg, I want to focus a lot on the Combine. Obviously, first, I just want to congratulate you for wrapping up, I believe, your third Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide already. Is that correct?
That's right. We've done three.
The time flies, and I'm confident to say this is the best one yet, and I hope that's a good feeling to get it done. We'll be getting it out to readers here very soon, and great work as always there. But let's jump right into the Combine. Am I right in thinking, Greg, that for the same reason that the All-Star Games have become watered down, the Combine is now as important as ever, I would imagine?
Well, in my opinion, this, and it's always been my opinion going way back, is that the most important, the combine came into existence in the first place, was it was a cost-effective way to get the medicals. And the workouts then were not really an afterthought, but a secondary thought, because you had all the players there, and as long as you're getting the medical, you might as well get a workout in. But as far as the medical, take, for example, a guy who's not going to be going to the combine, Chad Kelly, mm-hmm. who was originally invited, and then because of some instances in his past, they rescinded the invitation. And now anybody who's interested is going to have to fly him into their complex, use one of the 30 visits on him, give him a thorough physical. So now he's not going to be undergoing one physical. He might be going through 15 or 20, depending on how many teams are interested in him,
right.
Doing the exact same thing, having a bunch of MRIs. It's time-consuming for him. It's more expensive. So to alleviate something like that, you have a combine. You get 335 guys there, and you get the medical done. It's the most thorough physical exam these guys will ever have. For instance, if a kid broke his finger when he was in high school, and granted it might have been 6 years ago, you still get an MRI on that finger. That's just the way they do things. You know, they perform more than 600 MRIs on a yearly basis at the combine, because wow. if there's anything in your past, you know, they go back and look at it. And only one team could ask for an MRI, but all 32 teams get the results, which is one of the nice things about the combine, and your doctors may interpret the findings differently and look at it differently, but still you're getting a lot of things done. You're going to find out that there's been cases in the past, I don't want to bring up any names, where you find out that a player may have an internal medicine problem, and that the kid didn't even know about.
Sure.
You know, they actually find it and they help him, you know, get on with his life because of that. So it's an important part of the evaluation process. A lot of grades go up and down. I can't tell you how many times in the past where we've really had a high grade on a player, like the player, to the point that, you know, we hope we could draft them, and then they get to the combine and they flunk the medical, mm-hmm. and the doctors say there's no way. But I've also seen, you know, one team could fail a guy and another team could pass a guy, and that happens all the time. It's really the doctor's experience in dealing with all those different injuries.
Greg, is that how we explain what happened maybe with the Bills and Shaq Lawson last year?
Yeah. I mean, in fact, there's a example with the Bills going back a few years ago. Also, they took Kwanjo, the big tackle,
right.
From Alabama, and he had an arthritic knee, and a lot of teams bypassed him because, or lowered his grade because of his arthritic knee. And, you know, if you looked at his tape, his movement from his first year to his second year to his final year at Alabama really dropped off because of the arthritis in the knee joint. And teams had him either off the board or lowered his grade significantly. Buffalo still took him in the second round, and he barely played. He only plays in emergency because he doesn't have good movement skills. And that's with arthritis. And that's one of the killers at the combine as far as a medical condition. There's no cure, and it doesn't get better. It only gets worse. So if a guy's got an arthritic condition in his knees, it's a guaranteed grade dropper.
So I want to get into some of the medical evaluations that you are most anxious to learn about. And I think I'm kind of sharing your feelings that another reason that the combine is so important, obviously, is the first exposure to a lot of the underclassmen who are going to dominate a lot of the first round. So I want to get into some of that talk too. But you just wrote a column, I believe, either Tuesday or Wednesday on ProFootballWeekly.com. Definitely go find that, about the medicals that you're most anxious to see, Greg. So why don't you just share with the listeners two or three that you think are going to be the most telling in terms of draft stock after this all wraps up next week?
Well, the first is Ohio State safety Malik Hooker, who, when you watch the tape, that makes a strong case for being a top five player in the first safety off the board. Then a couple weeks ago, you find out he had two different surgeries. One was a sports hernia, and the other, they were very vague about the reporting. It said labrum, and a lot of people thought that meant a shoulder labrum, but from what I understand, it was a hip labrum. And the hip labrum on a skill position player can be tricky. So, you know, they'll do an MRI, they'll look at it, they'll do the x-rays and MRI, they'll look at it, they'll see, number one, how good the surgery was, and then the prognosis going forward, how quickly heal. And part of the combine medical process is it's not only next week, it's also 6 weeks from now. They have a recheck on all those players,
right,
especially players coming off injuries. And you want to see how much healing has taken place in that six-week period, and that will give the team doctors a good idea as to when the player will be able to play, if they'll be able to play, you know, as a rookie. So being that it's a hip labrum, I've been told by players who have had that surgery that, you know, it didn't prevent them from playing, but they never felt right after they had the surgery as far as their overall movement skills. So I think, you know, that's going to be a tricky issue with him. May not affect him at all, especially if it was a good surgery, but it could be something that could drop his grade significantly, and we'll find that out, you know, come draft day. Another player who also had the same surgery, and a highly regarded offensive lineman, Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin. And this is not a good year for offensive linemen, especially at the tackle position. And he's played tackle for Wisconsin. He had that surgery. Now, it shouldn't affect an offensive lineman as much as a safety or a wide receiver. But again, how long is he going to be out? When's he going to be ready to go? Is he going to miss OTAs? Is he going to miss any part of training camp? So that part's going to be important. Washington receiver Ross and then the Boise running back McNichols are both having labrum surgery on their shoulder after the combine. They're going to do what they can at the combine. I'm sure they won't lift, but they'll do all the running, jumping, and skill position work, and then they'll be done. They'll be shutting it down because they're going to have the surgery shortly after the combine, and they won't be able to work out for clubs then between the combine and the draft. So they got to hope that they really tear it up at the combine as far as, you know, running fast times, having good skill position drills, and jumping high, etc.
And like McNichols, Greg, there's another back with a potential shoulder issue, or the surgery was a year ago for Dalvin Cook. What do you think of him and how important the medical is for him? And just overall, Cook is such an exciting back, but maybe doesn't profile quite like the workhorse, like a Leonard Fournette or some of the other backs. What do you think about Cook overall?
Well, shoulder injuries can be tricky with a running back.
Right.
And in his case, there's rumor that he hasn't had one but two surgeries.
Okay.
And so, again, you're going to find that out at the combine. There was a, again, I don't want to mention the player's name, but it was a guy we drafted when I was working with Chicago. And the only information you get on the player as far as background information on medical is what the school gives you and what the player gives you. And so, you know, you go back to the schools, and the league medical people do this, and they're supposed to forward all the medical records so you have a complete history. But sometimes the schools aren't 100% honest with that history. And there's been cases where one school in particular, you know, kind of cut out a couple surgeries people had and their medical history, and with more than one player.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a player we took, and he had a foot problem. We had no idea about the foot problem because it was never brought up. So he wasn't x-rayed or MRI'd on his foot at the combine by all 32 clubs. And it turned out after we got him, he started at training camp having problems with his foot. And then he, you know, he said, well, I've already had one surgery on it, and it really shortened his career. So, you know, we may not have drafted this player had we known this, you know, this injury was there.
So, Greg, our team's going even a step further. I mean, that sounds like a bit of a cautionary tale. How can they ensure that absolutely no stone is left unturned when you get to Indy and you have 32 sets of objective eyeballs versus just those two you mentioned?
Well, again, you only can delve into and research what you know. So if information is being withheld by the school and or the player, then it's going to go by the wayside. You're just not going to know. But, you know, there's been cases that, again, with internal medicine, where they just through the They do an electrocardiogram and some other things on every player that goes through. And just because that they found out, one player had a heart defect. And, with medication, they were able to remedy the problem. But nobody would have known about it if it wasn't for the physical, the medical exams he had at the combine.
Okay. Greg, let's talk a little bit about, everyone wants to talk about the quarterbacks, of course, and it's interesting because the top four, arguably, are all underclassmen that teams have not really had a chance to interview or get on a whiteboard yet. How big is next week for Mitch Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Deshone Kizer, Patrick Mahomes, and who do you expect to impress in the classroom, and maybe who do you expect to show that they really are going to be a bigger project type of pick?
Well, as far as the combine goes with quarterbacks, I'm not going to say it's useless, but it's next to useless. You know, some of the guys, their agents don't have them throw, and I have no problem with that because of the way the combine is set up with the workout of quarterbacks. You know, you make two throws in a row, and you go to the back of the line, and you're not throwing to the same guys. You don't know the receivers. They might not be running a good route when it's your turn to throw. So you can have a very inconsistent workout.
Okay.
As far as that goes. So what's important, and your interview is 15 minutes with every player. You're not, especially with a quarterback, what are you going to find out in 15 minutes? You know, it's a basically get-to-know-you session, and then you go from there. It's really the private workouts. Pro days, I throw those out the window too, especially with quarterbacks, because those are scripted workouts, and the pro coaches really have no say in what happens in a pro day workout with a quarterback. You do with the other positions, but with the quarterback, the quarterbacks usually have a quarterback guru. He writes up the script for the pro day workout. He emphasizes the strong points. He stays away from the weak stuff that the player can do. He might do, 55 or 60 throws, but it's all stuff he can do good. So you could have an outstanding workout if you're really not seeing what he can't do. And the most important is to see what he can't do, not what he can do. So when you go in and do a private workout, now, number one, it hasn't been scripted. He hasn't been able to practice it. He doesn't know what to expect. You have him in the classroom for a number of hours. You're having him walk through some of his own plays from the offense he had in college. Then you may be installing some of your offense with him, see how quickly he can pick it up. What he learns in the classroom, can he carry that out onto the field when you do the workout on the field? Little things like that become very important, and the coaches get a strong idea of whether they can work with the player or not work with the player, if they have a personality conflict or they mesh well together. So that's very important, especially at the quarterback position. You're going to see guys go up and down on people's boards at that position more than any other position over the next, say, 6 to 8 weeks.
And that is a great point by Greg Gabriel, Pro Football Weekly draft guide author, chatting for a few more minutes here. So what it sounds like is it's pretty fluid. I mean, us draft junkies like to gravitate toward each next big landmark, the combine obviously being the big one, but it really is these private workouts where they can get these guys in a room for hours on end sometimes even, that will really start to learn about the football knowledge of these guys with pretty limited track records. Just a hunch though, Greg, I know you're high on Deshone Kizer, comes from the pro-style offense, has a little bit more experience at the line of scrimmage. Out of the next three, Trubisky and Watson, probably a tier above Patrick Mahomes, although it seems like Mahomes is starting to get a lot of buzz too. Any of those guys that you expect to maybe impress given the lack of pro-style experience they have, or in the other direction, maybe kind of hurt their stop because they seem to just not have a clue yet?
At the combine or?
No, just over the next handful of weeks. Because like you said, in the 15-minute interviews, we may not learn lots, but everyone wants to hear about the quarterbacks. You know that.
Right. Well, if they have a good quarterback coach that they're working with, then obviously they're going to be learning to take snaps under center, do three-step, five-step, seven-step drops, those types of things, do NFL-type throws, and that's what they're going to be working on. If they have mechanical issues, they're going to try to be working on that. The problem you have with that is a lot of times for a workout, he'll fix the problems he has in his delivery. And I'm not saying any of these guys have a problem with their throwing motion, but they can fix it for that short period of time. But then you get into training camp and you get into game conditions, they always revert back. And, prime example was Tim Tebow. He tightened up his release first workouts, and people thought, okay, that long, elongated throwing motion he had where he dropped the ball down by his knees when he started to throw was a thing of the past, and that was wrong. As soon as he got into the game, that's exactly what he was doing. So, again, that part of that is just getting to learn the player, see how coachable he is, how quickly he picks things up. And but who's going to jump to the forefront, really? I have no idea. That's what makes the next 6 to 8 weeks really exciting at that position, is you're going to find out a lot. Now, the teams aren't going to say much, but if you can, you know, talk to some people you know, you might hear some things. But still, a lot of people lie. Like I said, it's a lying season, so it's people that you can really trust that you can find out information from. Now, I could tell you a story. Last year, I had a conversation with a team that was in the mix for quarterback, and I talked to their quarterback coach after he went through the process, and he was adamant that Goff was the best guy. He liked Wentz, and when you were watching the workouts on TV, it looked as if they might have been leaning towards Wentz, but he told me, well, no, it's Goff because he can process better. And, you know, as it turned out, the problem Goff had once he got to the NFL was processing, and Wentz was far better. And I think what just hurt his evaluation with this particular team was the level of comp. Played at an FCS level of comp, and they just didn't trust that he was going to be able to do at the NFL level what he was able to do at the FCS level.
Speaking about Jared Goff specifically, in last year's combine, obviously his hand size was a big story. Greg, are there guys specifically from a measurement standpoint? I would guess Deshaun Watson. You tell me, are there two or three guys that we don't have exact measurables on that you think you and teams are going to be very interested in, and that may influence their stock a bit?
Well, I think with all the juniors, you have no measurables. You know, with the seniors, at least, you know, the scouts were in there last spring where they didn't get a time. They at least got a height, weight, arm length, hand span. Some of that stuff isn't exactly accurate, but it gives you an approximation. With the juniors, you have nothing. So what we get at the combine is going to be the first time we get that information. And, you know, Watson, prime example, you know, he's listed in the program at Clemson as being 6'3", 215. I've talked to guys who made school calls, and they said there's no way he's 6'2", and he's probably closer to 205. So, again, next week we'll find out exactly how big he is and his hand size and everything else. But, you know, hand size is important. Guys with smaller hands can have a tougher time, number one, spinning the ball, and number two, ball security as far as fumbles. So that is, even though it doesn't seem like a big thing, it can be an important part of the evaluation process.
Right, and I know certain coaches will value that even more than others. We've heard Hugh Jackson talking a lot about hand size in the AFC North and the elements outside, and you know, the importance relative to ball security. So it'll be one more thing to watch. I'm sure we'll hear a bit about hand size next week at the Combine. Greg, we're certainly going to hear about the workout warriors. Give me a few of your candidates to be this year's Byron Jones or Vic Beasley, Breshad Perryman. Who do you expect to blow it out of the water just in terms of the stopwatch and jumping and all that good stuff?
Yeah, good question. I haven't even thought about that one. I'll change it a little bit. Guys that I'm hoping have good workouts.
Sure.
Number one, Juju Smith-Schuster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have him right now just based on tape as my top receiver. And again, we're just watching tape. You know, we don't make school calls. And where people have, you know, Mike Williams from Clemson, I like Smith-Schuster's game a little bit better than Mike Williams. Williams may be a little bit faster. I think Smith-Schuster's a more physical type of guy and a little better after the catch. I'm anxious to see how fast he runs, what his actual size is. He's listed at 6'2", 220. He looks every bit of that. I think if he can run in the 4.45 or better range, he's going to be the first or second receiver taken. If he runs 4.55, then, you know, he might not go till the second round, but that's a stopwatch-driven position. So a lot of these guys, especially wide receivers, corners, safeties, if they don't run good, their value goes down. A guy that I'm anxious to see work out to is Zay Jones from East Carolina. Great Senior Bowl, great production. What, he had 158 catches or something like that at East Carolina this past year. Catches everything. He's got a big receiving radius, good hands. But then you watch the tape, he looks like a 4.65 guy, maybe even a 4.7 guy on tape. Just no separation quickness. What he has is great hands and ability to adjust the ball. And he's a pretty good route runner. He can get in and out of his breaks fairly quickly, breaks down good. He's got good flexibility in his knees and hips. But I just don't see flat-out speed. And so I didn't grade him as high as a lot of other people have him. Again, stopwatch-driven position. If he runs in the 4.5s, that I think a lot of people are expecting him to run in the 4.6s or worse, if he runs in the 4.5s, that helps him. If he stays in the 4.6s, he's not getting a sniff anywhere near, you know, he might not go till day 3 if he runs that slow.
Wow, okay. So, yeah, a big week upcoming for Zay Jones. Obviously, Laquon Treadwell is the most recent example of what Greg's referring to with the stopwatch-driven position, although Treadwell still ended up going, what, low 20s, but we saw he absolutely was unable to make an impact as a rookie for the Vikings. So, Greg, at the top of the interview, you mentioned Chad Kelly, his combine invite rescinded because of some off-field issues. Everyone knows Joe Mixon's story. He will not be at the combine next week. What are your thoughts on the NFL's new rule that prevents people with domestic violence history from getting an invite to the combine? Before I even go to B, what do you think of that? It almost seems like maybe it doesn't help either the prospects or the teams because of what an important opportunity this is to get information on these kids.
Well, it does. Actually, it hurts the teams a little bit because now I think the league is being almost a little bit hypocritical in this.
Absolutely.
The combine is an area where you've got bringing everybody at one place. Teams are there. The players are there. You can get a lot done in a short period of time, and it's cost-effective. So now, you know, the NFL says they want kids to be in school, et cetera, while you know, in the case of Mixon, Case of Kelly, and some of these other guys, and I'll go back to Kelly in a second, you know, they're going to be flying all over the country going to different teams for private meetings and to have the medical done because it's not being done at the combine. So, you know, I could understand that they don't let the guy work out. Kelly's case can't work out. He just had an ACL in November. But, you know, I think the medical's important, and it's a help to the teams to get the medical done. Why not let them go for the medical and just not let them work out? And, you know, and then you got to, you know, you can get them at the pro day, and then it's really going halfway as far as penalizing the player a bit, but not penalizing them all the way.
Sure.
But now getting back to Kelly didn't have a domestic violence issue. Kelly was an underage kid, and, you know, 21 years old to drink in most states. This is in his hometown of Buffalo, where I'm from. He's down in Chippewa Street area, which is the bar district, and in a place as an underage kid, got a little loaded, got into a fight, even with some bouncers, then opened his mouth, said some stupid things, said, I'm going to go back and get my AK-47, something like that, along those lines. Things that, a stupid 18-year-old would say. And, you know, that was it. Then there was another instance. He didn't get arrested, but, you know, he got involved in a fight at his brother's high school game when his brother got jumped, and he went in to try to break it up. But in that case, again, it wasn't domestic violence. It was an arrest for an assault. He I think they ended up pleading it no contest or something. He was convicted of a lesser charge. But that was, you know, a couple of years ago. But I think if they're going to say it's because of domestic violence issues, then hold it at that, not at a totally separate type of issue.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Greg, unfortunately, we're running out of time here already, but I don't know where it goes. We appreciate you being on the program as always. I do want to just circle back. You mentioned the uncertainty at quarterback in this draft class and how maybe some things will begin to crystallize over the next you know, couple months when interviews and whiteboard sessions occur. But obviously, a lot is going to be determined by what happens on the pro side of things. You and I had a fun back and forth text exchange the other day about Mike Glennon. I'll let the listeners hear from you what you think of Glennon, but just your overall thoughts on the pro side of how teams may be able to solve the quarterback position, and how, kind of ironically, there's also a lot of uncertainty, whether it's Glennon or Jimmy Garoppolo, a hot trade topic, Tony Romo with his injury history, Kirk Cousins due to be potentially getting $25 million on a franchise tag. How do you think some of these things shake out? Do you see some big surprises coming with some of these names?
Well, I've been saying all along, and I'm still going to hold to it, if Garoppolo gets traded and ends up on the trade market, and it's all strictly media rumor right now. But right. The Patriots aren't saying we're trying to trade him. So, and the rumor started in New England, and you know, it's been going strong for months. But Belichick never gets rid of players he thinks can play. And the quarterbacks he's traded in the past have all turned out to be journeymen. He's working with these guys on a day-to-day basis. He knows what they can do, knows what they can't do. And if he's going to give up on a guy that he just spent a second-round pick on a couple of years ago, and you know, maybe has the potential to be, take control of the club when Tom Brady finally retires, and I think that's going to be sooner than it is later. You know, he'll be 40 years old next year, and at 40 years old, he could drop off real quickly. And even though he does take care of himself, you just can't expect him to play at that high level all the time. I think we saw some of that in the first round. He looked like an old first half. He looked like an old man the first half of the Super Bowl, and the adrenaline got flowing when they got back in the game in the second half, and he was his own self. But is he starting to go downhill? You know, I like to use the golf course analogy, and right, you know, an 18-hole golf game, he's somewhere on the 18th hole. I just don't know if he's driving the ball or on the green putting. And so there's not much left in that career. And if New England wants to get rid of Garoppolo, that's telling you something, that there's something missing in his game, unless you can turn around and get a one for him. And I wouldn't blame them if they could get a one, because they only paid a two for him in the first place. But you look at his experience, he really has a game and a half of experience. He's had some mop-up duty other than that, but, you know, unfortunately got hurt. Early in the year, he was supposed to play all four games, ends up playing a game and a half, and teams would have a lot better idea what he could do if he was able to play, you know, all four games. But now some of these other guys, obviously Cousins is going to get his money regardless of whether it's with Washington or somewhere else, and he's got the skins on the wall. He's played really well. But the other guys, they've been backups, and you don't know what they are. Last year we saw what happened with Osweiler. He plays a few games for Denver. It looks good, but they watered down the offense a little bit. It wasn't doing what Peyton Manning was asked to do, and he had a great supporting cast around and put up some decent numbers. Houston went out, spent a ton of money to get him, and he ends up busting for him. And now they're still looking for a quarterback, and they're going to have some huge cap hits because of all the money they gave him last year. I don't see Glennon as anything more than a reliable backup-type quarterback. I don't think he's got a real quick release. He's got average accuracy. He's got virtually no mobility skills. And in today's NFL, you're looking for guys who can move around in the pocket, create with their feet. I just don't see that. I said it to you yesterday or the other day when we were exchanging texts. I said, if he was so great, why did Tampa Bay go out and spend a first-round pick on Jameis Winston? If they thought they had something, they wouldn't have drafted Jameis. Mm-hmm. So, I think he's a guy, and that's it. Could I be wrong? Absolutely. I can't remember his name now, the quarterback from Alabama, the Cincinnati.
A.J. McCarron.
Yeah, you know, to me, he's an interesting guy. He's actually got more play time than Garoppolo has, but I like the way he played in college. Mm-hmm. And he played in a pro-style system in college and won a national championship. He is not going to be a guy that's going to take you to the Super Bowl, but I think, you know, he can be a winning quarterback in the right system. He's got limitations, obviously, to his game, but he's one of the more interesting guys, I think, out there. Obviously, and I'm not taking away anything from Garoppolo. I just, you know, I worked with Belichick for 7 years. I know, watching the history of how he trades players, if he's trading them, there's something wrong.
Great stuff, Greg. And then just lastly, the two other big names, they have some injury concerns, and right now they're not available, but the I think conventional wisdom says they're going to be via their release because no one's going to trade for them. What about Tony Romo and Jay Cutler? Either of these guys pique your interest as potential stopgaps or solutions for a quarterback needy team?
I would be interested in Tony Romo at all. I use this phrase several times. We're talking about him. I think he's more fragile than a crystal chandelier. And, you know, he proved that early in the preseason. The third play he was in, he gets hit, and it wasn't a big hit. It was just an ordinary hit, and he's down, and he's out for the next 2.5 to 3 months because of an injury. He's injury-prone at his age. He's had a lot of injuries. I don't think you can trust that he's going to suit it up for more than a couple games before he gets hurt again. Cutler, somebody's going to be intrigued with the physical talent. He's very athletic. He's got an arm second to none, but the head's not screwed on straight. And, you know, some coach, Zigo, said, you know what, I can work with him. I can make him work. And they could end up getting burned. It's just because Jay's his own worst enemy. Very, very talented guy. Has never reached really the... never gotten to the ability that he has. You know, there's always something missing, and I think it's all in his head. He just prevents himself from being as good as he should be. If the Bears are unable to trade him, and I think they won't be able to trade him because of the contract, somebody's not going to want to assume that number unless they can get a deal done beforehand and say, you know, he'll agree to restructuring the contract, and then a trade may be able to be done. But he won't be out on the street long if he gets cut. I think somebody's going to pick him up because he is talented, and there's not enough quarterbacks to go around in the league.
All right, so I'll go start designing my Jay Cutler Jets jersey now for all the reasons you just said. It sounds like a Jets type of move. But, Greg, we took too much of your time. It was fun, as always. We really appreciate it. Everyone, go out and get your 2017 Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide. Greg Gabriel, the great author, more than 250 scouting reports, mock draft, team needs, feature writing. There's all kinds of great stuff. We're excited to get it to you. And, Greg, I know we're going to be in touch in the coming weeks and months. This fun's just getting underway. So thank you for all your insight. And we'll look forward to getting more of it on the podcast soon.
Okay, thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
And that was Greg Gabriel. Thanks again one more time to him for dropping all kinds of knowledge. And thank you again to Loot Crate, our wonderful sponsor. And thank you to you guys the most for being here on this podcast. And just a reminder, because I didn't do it at the top of the show, please head over to iTunes and make sure you are subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. If you like what you hear, we'd love it if you left us a rating and a comment as well. And as I said, I know we took a few weeks off, but we are going to be back more routinely. So make sure you check us out, hopefully on a weekly basis, throughout the off season for the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish. Appreciative as always that you are with me. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next week from the Combine.